is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, joins me, and we're very pleased to welcome back from his travels Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, who's been traveling through the region incessantly. So now that he's home, we're going to get to ask what? Thaddeus?
Malcolm, you traveled quite a bit. I think Greece was on the agenda. Did you go there for some Aeschylus with a little piece of spinach pie on the side?
I will not discuss the diet I had there, but for security reasons. But I actually had very good kosher food in Athens as a nice restaurant, and in Cyprus. It's a result of the sharp increase in tourism from Israel and from Jewish communities around the world. Both countries are coming back. Greece, as you know, went through a very difficult period, but it is you see the growth, the building that's going on there. There's still economic problems, and of course, the obsession is with Turkey that continues to exercise its aggressive actions through incursions, sometimes 50, even 100 a day, by air over the islands, which they lay claim to. And of course, Cyprus has its own complaints about Turkey. But Turkey is playing a multiple game that we saw in Israel, where it's begun to reach out, as it has to the Gulf and to other countries that I hope we'll be able to talk about. But today, there was a 3+1 ministerial, meaning the foreign ministers of Cyprus, Greece, and Israel, and the United States held a Zoom conference today. And it's a continuation of the increasing coordination and cooperation in security, in economic, in health, in so many areas, energy, climate action, emergency preparedness that we saw during our trip. And we met with the top military and political leaders in each of the three countries. And you hear really them all singing from one song sheet that is really quite remarkable. And we went together with Greek American leaders, and all of us walked away, I think, encouraged. The three leaders condemned the recent terrorist attacks against Israelis, and they are trying to develop a list of deliverables so that before their next meeting, which will be before the end of the year, they will start to implement those things. So the trip was really very exciting and encouraging. This is our 10th year doing it every 2 years. When we started, it was a dream, and it's really blossoming. And I think it will grow, that the Mediterranean Initiative will grow to include many other countries soon.
Malcolm, we're very glad you're back, because we can't figure out Israeli politics. The summer session of the Knesset starts with this headline: Coalition fends off first no-confidence motions of Knesset summer session. Likud-led measure fails 52-61, while Shas motion gets 52-56. Lapid insists government can hang on despite losing the majority. Netanyahu to the prime minister: it's over, Naftali. What the heck is going on?
That is a very good question. And being there doesn't help clarify it. In fact, sometimes it obfuscates it even more. The government now convenes for, I think, 2 or 3 months before the summer recess, which will probably take until mid-October. Probably the government is better off when they're not in session. But the question here is, will the government in the coalition, the governing coalition, which now does not have a majority, will they be able to exercise any kind of legislative prerogatives or initiatives given the balance, which is 60-60, but now others left, so they would have 59. You need 61 to overthrow the government. We don't see that the opposition has that. And in fact, they tried a no confidence vote today, and that did not work. So but it's a very tenuous situation, especially with the Arab party, the Islamist party that's in the government, Ra'am, where many of the members do not want to continue in the current coalition participation. Others do. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But it's certainly very tenuous, and that impacts the ability to undertake initiative. Where they are united is in fighting terrorism, which has been taking a heavy toll almost every day, an incident. And the numbers mount as we go along. And there was, of course, during Ramadan, when tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people came to Jerusalem, which was the real story, in peace and prayed, whereas hundreds engaged in terrorism, yet that became obviously the story. And the incitement came from Hamas, which is also egged on by Iran. And there's plenty of evidence that this was all pre-planned, pre-positioning of the rocks and the fireworks and other equipment that they had pre-positioned to carry out the violence, which did not lead to the mass demonstrations of the past. It didn't lead to the kind of manifestations, which shows that it is still a limited number, very limited number of people who are engaged. Many of them may be on the payroll of Hamas and other groups, but it certainly raised the tensions considerably. What people are looking forward to now is the visit of the president, which is scheduled for mid to late June.
Just a detail, Malcolm, 60-60. Does that sustain itself indefinitely without a majority? Is there a timeline?
No, I don't think so. No, there's no timeline, but it's practicality. I just don't see how that can last. When contentious issues start to come up, and more of them will. And as people look to the next election and jockey for position, so that you had two members of the party of the Prime Minister Bennett go to the opposition. And that may be because they're reading the tea leaves and want to be in a key position in the next round. Now that means that he has a party really of four people in the government. And that is not a very strong position, a negotiating position. But everybody has an interest in keeping the coalition together because they don't want to go to elections where the public could punish them.
That is.
And Malcolm, way back in the day, I talked about the Iran-Syria Mutual Defense Pact as the modern-day equivalent of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. And we've seen a visit by Assad now to Iran. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, it's very significant. It got almost no coverage here, but you were prescient in your assessment of it. I think it's a statement by both. It's Assad reaching out to the Iranians. He thanked them for all of their support. He met with Raisi and with Khamenei and with the foreign minister. And in it, they talked about how the Zionist regime is unable to rule the region. They also made anti-American statements. Right now with Russia's role diminishing, Iran, I think, is going to try to flex its muscles in Syria, increase its presence and position, which Russia tried to offset, and Turkey as well. We will see how that actually plays out. But it was a showing of the flag, criticizing the 100 countries that call themselves friends of Syria, as he said, but who backed the opponents. They talked about Syria's credibility having grown. And, of course, the focal point of a lot of the comments was Soleimani, with both the Iranian and the Syrian leaders praising him and recalling it. But it's part of the shift in the region where you see everybody reaching out to different parties because nobody has faith in the future with the West. Has confidence where they will be. I think that accounts for some of what Turkey is doing with the shifting stance, their economic problems, other things that are motivating them. Syria certainly is going to look for aid in rebuilding. But we hear it throughout the region. And I think it's one of the reasons why the Abraham Accords have been strengthened, why the Greece, Israel, Cyprus and other relationships are growing is because people are looking more internally and seeing that they're going to have to depend upon themselves and their neighbors to counter, whether it's Iran or Turkey or any of the other forces in the region.
Since you've been away, Malcolm, we've not had any good explanation for what's going on inside Iran. The sanctions are still in place, although they're avoiding them. To hear the adversaries tell us, they've been avoiding them with clever means, with cutouts. There was also a report about a terrorist plot being interrupted by the Israeli intelligence services. But it happened inside Iran, and I lost track, and you haven't been here. So can you help me?
I will help you, sir. Let me do this quickly. 62 senators, including, I think, 16 Democrats, voted to oppose removal of the IRGC from the terror list, said that any new agreement must address the full range of Iran's destabilizing activities, including the missile development, terrorism, and sanctions evasion, which are not a part of the JCPOA. I think there's a growing disenchantment with the whole process. There is a last-ditch effort by the Europeans now in Iran to try to resurrect it and perhaps come back to the old formula where they will take the IRGC off but leave Al-Quds on or leave parts of on the foreign terrorist list, which Iran is insisting that they be removed. In the meantime, they're selling more oil. Their exports are up 30% over last year. The majority of it goes to China. They export about 1 million barrels a day, plus 300,000 barrels more that go through third parties to China. So they have the income with the price of the oil up. I think that it reduces the pressure, although the situation in the country is terrible. And what they announced now is that their ability to build on their own a new fully Iranian-made nuclear reactor, they're planning for it. It said they have the full cycle of nuclear fuel production and are producing 20 types of radioactive drugs. But we know that that is often the cover just to develop their nuclear capacity and saying that it is for medical purposes. We're also going to see visits of the Qatari emir. And, you know, he's had a close relationship with Iran, but they are they're discussing the issues that how to deal with the 2022 World Cup, to their nuclear program, to the other issues, which I think, Efrain, you raised the important issue of this attempt by Iran to use drug cartels to carry out assassinations of an American general, an Israeli diplomat, and others. And Israel caught them inside Iran, interrogated the people. They admitted to the plot. They said they were paid $1 million for the attempted terrorist attacks. It certainly was a message, and I think Israel released the information to send a message to Iran that they're not safe anywhere, and if they continue all of this terrorist activities and simulation, they will find themselves in a more and more difficult situation.
I want to understand this. There's a terrorist plot. It's IRGC, Al-Quds likely, and it's being put together in Tehran. Israel sends agents into Iran to interrogate them, and they admit it to Israel, and then leave the Israelis leave the country. What happens to the terrorists?
So the people who were responsible, we don't know. They didn't say exactly what they did with them, but they did reveal some of the details about what the plot was, and they said they were carrying out the assassination via drug cartels, and with Iran paying the bills for it. The Quds Force was responsible for these overseas operations. Israel somehow got information about it. They apprehended and interrogated the IRGC members, especially Mansour Rasuli, who was leading the plot to carry out these assassinations.
And we don't know Rasuli's fate. We just don't know anything.
Well, I do not know. Somebody does.
It's quite spectacular. Do we know why they had to go inside Iran and put themselves at great risk and couldn't wait till the plotters left the borders? I don't understand.
Because you're dealing with the drug cartels, where they assign people to carry out some of the assassinations outside. So if you don't get it at the core, you might not be able to stop it. So this is not, you know, Hamas or others where you have all the operatives and everybody working and then they go out. Here you had an operative who was coordinating this, but had the use of the drug cartels, which operate out of Iran and can strike in many places. They were not going to be carried out. The diplomat who was to be assassinated was in Germany. The American official somewhere is in the Middle East. So the American general. So it was essential for them to nip it in the bud.
Malcolm Hoelein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. When we come back, the dusty one will be here. Indiana Hoelein himself. I'm John Batchelor.